So, hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Violet Wanderers. It is, as always, I, your lovely host, Alexis, joined by my equally lovely co-host, Ian. And joining us today, we have a couple of Threadnought veterans. It is Kaylin, aka Mars Girl, and also everyone's favorite lawyer, Greg Doucette. Hey guys.
Hello.
What's up?
Hello. Greg is really like the Threadnought guy. And then I was just around because things were happening before Threadnought started Threadnoughting.
Right.
And I've got to disclaim the favorite lawyers just because there's like 50 lawyers involved. And if I say I'm the favorite, someone will show up and shank me.
It's just really like you. The name and the face associated with Threadnought, really.
Say, Akiva
and then all these other lawyers piled
on. It'll be Akiva and Greg pistols at dawn.
Right.
So anyway, for those unfamiliar with the Threadnought, we have multiple episodes back in the back catalog documenting this, as well as on our not really ever used YouTube channel. The one video we've got uploaded was the Threadnought, I believe, 2-year anniversary.
Jesus.
Where we had like over 100 Threadnought veterans come on. It was a fun thing that I moderated. We had like just tons of people on like this huge video chat talking about stuff. So anyway, Greg, just a real quick boil down for anybody who hasn't yet dove into the past. I'm going to go through real fast. So there was a creepy voice actor named Vic Minoja, or as Kaylin memorably called him, Screamy Broccoli Man. Did I get that right?
Yeah, because so he was the voice actor for the character named Broly in Dragon Ball, and he had a movie come out at the end of 2018 going into early 2019 called Dragon Ball Super Broly. So he was the titular character, and all these characters in Dragon Ball, their names are all puns based on either underwear or food. And Broly is clearly based on broccoli. And all this character does is just screams a shit ton. That's all this character does. And so Screamy Broccoli Man to me was just a very natural development.
So anyway, so Screamy Broccoli Man had been handsy with con attendees as well as co-workers for years. Was a broken stare in the voice actor community. Everyone knew he was a creep. At one point he got like allegedly caught trying to take a pair of like teenage twins into a hotel room. Like there's a whole bunch of just gnarly fucking shit. And what happened was is this kind of came out into the open during the Me Too movement, and as a way of defending himself, a couple of YouTube lawyers convinced him to sue.
Lawyers, in quotes.
Convinced him to sue a couple of the women who were accusing him of being a creep to them. This then resulted in a number of the Gamergate flotsam, jetsam, and otherwise detritus latching on to this as their latest lifeboat in the culture war. And attacking anyone who dared speak out and say, yeah, this creepy guy has been a creep for a long time. And for a while, the only authorities, so to speak, in the space were the two shitty YouTube lawyers. Then Greg, our hero, my eyelashes are fluttering. You can't see it because my camera's off because my download's fine. My upload's shit, apparently. Found out about it just through law Twitter, just of a like, who the, it was, Greg, you say the quote, who is and bumptious, and you say the quote.
Well, before we get there, you're missing a critical part. So under Texas law, because this lawsuit was filed in Texas, you have to send a letter to anyone you want to sue for defamation. They're called TDMA letters, for the Texas Defamation Mitigation Act. And in this letter, you have to identify what the defamatory statements are to give that person a chance to retract them. And so in this letter, sent by a lawyer, signed by a lawyer, you had such excerpts like, you said that my client was a piece of shit because he is not literally feces. That was defamatory. There was one letter where you said Jesus would condemn my person to hell. Jesus was about love, not about defamation. Therefore, that's defamatory. Just a bunch of really painfully stupid things that any minimally competent first-year law student would learn is never a basis for defamation, got put into these letters. And so the letters are what got Law Twitter looking at the case because they were fucking hilarious. And so Akiva Cohen, one of the lawyers that got involved with the Threadnought, shared a tweet of a letter. So basically someone who got the letter tweeted it, said, "Do you believe this shit?" Akiva said, "Oh my God, this is funny as hell. I'm literally dead." Pope had ended up seeing it. A bunch of other folks saw it. I got tagged for my thoughts because I spent 10 years doing a lot of First Amendment cases. And I had no idea who Vic Mignogna was, didn't know what he did, had no clue about any of it. All I knew is that I had seen Akiva's tweet, and I agreed that the letter looked utterly bonkers.
Right.
And so I said, who is Vic, and why does he have a moron representing him in a bumptious defamation lawsuit? And so that was the tweet that I apparently never should have said, because
the tweet heard around the world.
Thus, the Threadnought was born. Yeah. So,
okay.
That is the genesis of what became known as the Threadnought, where a bunch of this creepy anime guys, stands, and a bunch of people who didn't care about anime at all, but just saw this as an opportunity to shit on women, piled in to try and go after Greg. The problem is Greg is very good at quote tweeting and then making fun of these idiots. And so he did. And it got retweeted into my timeline. I was already friends with Renfamous and a few of the other people who'd been being attacked. So I kind of saw it pretty early on. Everybody piled in. I wound up inviting Greg on the show. Greg, Ren, a few other people kind of came on. We talked about it. I got doxxed by Kiwi Farms over that. Because how dare I have women on my show defending themselves against a sexual predator? Clearly, I must be doxxed.
Our parents were...
Anyway, the point is, Vic lost the case. Oh no, Nick, we lost the case again. After a year
this
and a half...
This was 2019 when that originally happened, yeah.
Yeah, after like, I don't know how long it was from the start of the case exactly, it's not important, but they lost the case, a judge ruled against them, which all of these morons responded to by finding the judge's long defunct Facebook page and sending him death threats. But then Vic's really incompetent lawyer tweeted out that it was halftime, and then they went into appeals. And where we are here today is that the appeals are in. And Greg, do you want to announce the score?
So the question is, do we count the score? Well, Vic lost everything, so let me just go ahead and put that out there as the key point. But... So at the trial level, there were 17 causes of action. He lost. So he was 0-17 originally. He lost everything at the trial, the appellate court. So technically that was 0-34. But there was also a separate cross appeal by the defendants asking for more fees. And he lost that too. So the question is, do you call that 0-35 or is it -1-34? I don't really...
with that record though... He could totally be on the starting Buffalo Bills team, though.
What? Like, you're trying to dog me because I'm a Bills fan. They're literally the Super Bowl favorites.
I know.
That record, he could be hired as the head coach of the Detroit Lions. Would have been the better football joke there.
Okay.
You ignoramus. Okay. Or, I don't know. I mean, the Panthers have, what, Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield this year? Greg,
we're not going to talk about the Panthers. The Panthers is a sore subject.
Right. So anyway, yeah. So the reason I asked Greg to come back on today is to kind of do a quick little, a bit of a recap of where we got to this point, how, like, what the appeals did. I already asked Kaylin about the letter that was sent for the good of all humanity, which I want to have her, now that we're in the official portion of the podcast, if she's got it looked up, read the whole thing.
I do have that.
Just like, you know, Greg, if you could give us a little bit of an overview of, like, obviously, like, anyone who wants more detail, Greg explained it exhaustively. Thank you for that in earlier episodes. But like the appeals being dismissed, I've seen a lot on Akiva's and jurisprudence and a few others have been like, you know, this is what happens when an appellate court gets pissed and tells you to go away. But like, do you want to kind of go over just a little bit, like the appeals rejections and stuff?
So there's a lot. And the gist of it is, and a lot of this is not going to make sense to people that don't do appellate law, but when you're doing an appeal of a case, the appellate judges don't have the benefit of seeing the witnesses or knowing what was presented in court at the time. All they are looking at is what is called the record on appeal, which is the documents that were actually filed and transcripts of the different hearings. And that's it. So they don't get, you know, for example, at the initial hearing at the trial level, there was a clip of Vic confessing in his deposition to pulling the hair of one of the women he sued, who he then sued claiming that she was lying about it. So it was just a really bizarre thing you would ever do. And that was played on repeat throughout the hearing, of him gesturing how he was pulling her hair. The appeals court doesn't see that. All the appeals courts get is the documents. And so when you're doing an appeal, you want to be really precise with what you are showing the appeals court. There's certain documents that you put in the record. And then when you file your brief, you cite to specific pages. And on those specific pages, you cite to specific lines or paragraphs. Ty Beard, who is the moron representing Vic, the estate lawyer of Nick Rikita, who we call Screech, was the one that convinced Vic to hire Ty.
Gotta love the intersection of my various threads of my life that Screech is now deeply involved in yelling about Keffels, the trans woman that Kiwi Farms is trying to get murdered. So that's been
fun. I do want to come back to that at some point in the future, like on this podcast,
because this is all starting to tie back into Kiwi Farms. As you guys can stand to be around us, we've got time. I work third shift. It's fine.
So yeah, by all means, let's keep on this track, but let's like come back to the Kiwi Farm shit in a little bit.
So with respect to Ty Beard, who is not good at appeals, does not do appellate law regularly, had never done defamation law before, his appellate brief sucked.
Didn't they literally add defamation law to their website after he started the case? Am I remembering that right?
Not only did they add it to their website, they portrayed themselves as defamation law experts.
Carry on.
Got pointed out in the thread knot that they are not experts, they tweaked it a little bit. But yes, this was a big thing for them. So basically, Screech helped raise $250,000 from Vic's fans, gave it to Ty. Ty had an easy payday, didn't really have to do any work because he had no intent of actually winning the case. So in this appeals brief, rather than citing to specific pages to make specific arguments, if you look at the citations in it, and we've got all the legal documents, if any of your listeners want to have them, we will gladly give them the links.
I will post a thread.
These several hundred pages of the record.
I'll post a thread.
In the brief, Ty is like, he's like, look at these several hundred pages, cross-reference them to these several hundred other pages. And that's just not the type of stuff that judges want to deal with on appeal, because they just don't have the time or patience to deal with that type of stuff. So at the trial level, you had four different defendants. Against all four of them, you had four different claims. So you had claims for defamation, tortious interference with contracts, tortious interference with prospective business relations, and civil conspiracy. And then you had one bonus claim against Funimation, claiming that they were responsible for all of the other voice actors who were contractors, basically claiming that in fact they were employees.
Right.
So at the trial level, all 17 of those got dismissed. As part of that though, Ty Beard, again, moron, committed certain crimes.
And yes, he did.
Is it normal to commit crimes when you're representing people? No, it just, that's how Ty Beard happens to practice. So for example, Ty submitted several sworn affidavits that were notarized. And in the notary section, it says so-and-so appeared before me and swore that they are who they say they are. Well, the date of these particular oaths It was known that the people that were sworn in were not in Tyler, Texas, where Ty Beard was. They were, in fact, several of them in other states.
They were at conventions and stuff.
Yeah. And they were having photographed in other states. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Correct. Widely documented, obvious notary fraud. So that was part of the issue. One of the documents that Vic, quote unquote, signed was not a normal signature. It was a copy and paste of Vic's signature from a CD that he had released years prior. And rather than just copy and paste it, someone opened it up in Photoshop or Word or whatever, we don't know, picked out the Blackjack font and manually typed in T-O-R, because Vic was not good enough for signing an affidavit. It had to be Victor.
His full legal name, yeah.
They manually typed in a font designed to look like script the last part of this guy's name so they could, quote-unquote, sign it without Vic actually being there to do so.
I mean, he was the reason why, in his defense, he was really busy. There was a lot of 13-year-old girls without trauma that he needed to make sure they had the trauma. So he had to go to the convention so they could meet their hero and be traumatized by him. I mean, you know, that's a rough gig. He was very, very busy.
He's a busy man. Very busy man.
It cracks me up because there's pictures of them smoking cigars together. Apparently, there was a line for people to sign pictures of Ty, for Ty to do autographs of pictures of him.
Yeah, and since then, Nick Rakita has gone on to be like a panelist and a guest at various anime conventions because he's tied to Vic Mignogna,
which,
regardless of the fact that he otherwise has nothing to do with anime.
Exactly, yes. Like, literally, it's the right wing, what I always call the right.
We should expect him on Fox News and
he's too low tier. He'll be on OAN.
OAN, that's the network I was trying
OAN,
to think of.
Newsmax, The Blaze. That's about the upper limit of his ability. But yeah, it's what I call the right wing welfare circuit, where once you've done something that chuds think in their heads has triggered yon libs, then they will just give you all of the money and attention because in their minds, they're not just watching a boring live stream of a guy getting drunk on Fireball. They're in their heads thinking, oh, some liberal is obsessively watching the viewer count of this drunk loser getting drunk on Fireball and screaming and crying because that viewer count is going up. Like, that's their whole thing, is they don't actually do shit they enjoy. They actively do stuff that no one would enjoy, in the thought that by doing so, they are somehow pissing someone else off.
Oh, outrage is incredibly easy to monetize.
Oh, yeah.
Very easy to monetize.
So anyway, sorry, Greg, carry on.
No, you're right. So we had the crimes. You have the notary fraud. You have the signature fraud. In addition to that, the documents that Ty filed at the trial court, we call it the hell filing because of how bad it was.
It's awful.
It was due by midnight, and they filed it late. So they missed the deadline. They then claimed that the reason it was filed late was because of technical difficulties, even though the metadata in the PDF showed that they were still working on it after the deadline. And in addition, there were several parts of it that were not finished. So throughout the document, when they're referring to exhibits, all you see is exhibit blank because the blanks never got filled in. So like any normal person watching knows exactly what happened. They were busy dicking around, didn't bother putting in the work, and they just, you know, put together some shit to file.
There was stuff like page 4 of blank, enough time is needed to sufficient.
That was different. So the more time is needed to sufficient was an actual sentence in their request for more time to file one of the documents. It may have been head filing, I don't know. But like when I tell you throughout this entire case, there were repeated fuck ups that competent lawyers just don't make. So like there was a vacation notice got filed that was fucked up. So they had to file an amended vacation notice. And then it got fucked up again. So there was a second amended vacation notice. It's just not a thing that competent litigators do. It just doesn't happen.
Right.
So in many ways, the thread knot was a prep for the Kraken stuff back in 2020, because we're watching that. And like, we've already lived through this in 2019, this type of idiocy. So I set all of that table setting to say, when the hearing happened to have the case dismissed at the trial level in 2019, one of the issues was this issue about fraud and the issue that the document was filed late. And so rather than face the music that he was committing crimes,
right,
Ty Beard said, we're going to withdraw our first document that had the fraudulent affidavits. And we instead want the court to look at the second document that we filed late.
Double down.
What the judge said was, I'll let you withdraw the fraudulent stuff. That's fine. You can do that. But I'm not going to consider the document you filed late because you filed it late. Deadlines actually matter in court. And so throughout the appeals opinion that just came out, you know, just a couple weeks ago, the court says from a legal standpoint, the case basically gets decided on that issue. By right. withdrawing the first set of stuff that had the fraudulent affidavits, Ty withdrew the only evidence that he could have presented to plausibly make the case. So the case was going to lose regardless just based on that procedural error of Ty Beard trying to cover his ass. Right. So that's the issue, is that that could have been enough. This could have been a one-page opinion calling it a day, saying that by withdrawing the original petition, they were done. And the court could have stopped, but they didn't. The court kept going. The majority opinion is 70 pages long.
Jesus.
And there is a exhaustive recitation of the facts of what happened.
So and is so, this why it took 3 years for them to finish working on this appeal? Because this, they decided, no, we need to lay this out fully and completely, just how ludicrous this whole thing was.
Honestly, we have no idea. Our guess is that the reason it took so long is because when Ty did his brief saying compare these 100 pages to these other 100 pages, we just kind of assumed that no one wanted to deal with it. So every time it came up, they kept pushing it off to do something else because they just didn't have the patience to go through the shit.
They were like, you know what?
These guys, but when I tell again,
the paralegals are all way too busy and stressed to deal with this. And we don't want to fucking. Yeah, I can absolutely see that. But how unusual is it for them to do a like? And I'm not talking. This isn't like Dobbs. This isn't Obergefell versus Hodges. Like, this is a creepy loser suing people who called him a creepy loser. How unusual is it for a court of appeals to issue a 70-page, basically, refutation? Like, is that, that's not something they normally do, right?
Correct. I think it's pretty weird. I've been doing defamation cases for 10 years personally. I've been reading about them for longer than that. It's not normal to see a 70-page opinion on a defamation case, especially in a state that has what are called anti-slap statutes. So a SLAPP, S-L-A-P-P, stands for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. And these are basically lawsuits filed to shut people up. You're not trying to win. You're just trying to make it expensive for them so they stop talking. And so certain states have seen how many of these
get filed. Also known as the J.K. Rowling action, yes.
Yeah, basically. Or Devin Nunes, for those of you that pay attention to politics, he files a lot of them.
Yep, filed them against
the
cow.
And so several states, California. Right, exactly. But California, Texas, Tennessee, quite a few others have put statutes in place that are designed to stop slaps early. So you have an early hearing to have the matter dismissed. And if the person who filed it loses, they have to pay the attorney's fees of the people they sued, which is not normally how it works. And so in those states, this anti-slap statute makes the appeals really easy. It's just you have to do these things. You didn't. Case is over. So most opinions you'd probably expect to be somewhere between 10 to 15 pages, maybe.
Okay.
To have something in the 70-page range is very rare.
Yeah.
So who's writing that?
In addition, the
judge is in like.
That would be a question for Greg, not me. You're looking at me.
So who is giving?
Who's writing the 70 pages?
Yeah. So is it the judge being like, "Why are you fucking wasting my time? You
it
guys
was multiple
assholes.
Judges, like, right? Like,
is it the judges giving basically their take on this? Like, why the fuck are you wasting our time and fucking go away?
Yes. So usually what will happen is that most appellate courts, and Texas is included in this, will have an initial panel of three judges that are randomly picked out of all of the Court of Appeal judges. You get a random three-judge panel, and that three-judge panel hears certain cases together. And so what will happen is after the briefs and the record are submitted, usually the judges will review it. They'll have clerks that will review it as well. Okay. And then they'll tell the clerk, this is what I want to have happen. Prep a brief for me that cites the relevant, you know, law and whatever. And then that's the, I don't want to call it easy, but that's the easy part. And then what happens after that is the judge gets it, edits it, decides if they like it, circulates it to other judges on the panel. Other judges can say, I want to do changes. Judges can write a concurrence. They can write a dissent. And so what you had here is all three judges agreed that the lawsuit was bullshit. That part was unanimous. And when I say they went through exhaustive detail explaining why, there are multiple digs in both the body and in the footnotes at how incompetent Ty Beard was. There is an exhaustive, exhaustive recitation of how much of a sexual predator and pedophile Vic Mignogna is, to the point where the court notes multiple times that there was evidence that Vic was perving on underage fans. Mm-hmm. They mentioned that at least twice. And so normally
and it's now
you
a matter
have
of court
that.
Record,
have a
so
court.
We can't get sued for defamation for saying he did it.
No. Correct. So it's something where, in addition to that, I should note, they held that as a matter of law, you can call someone a sexual predator and it's not defamatory.
Well, right, because there's a difference between a sexual predator and
a sex offender.
A sex offender, yeah. Because, right. I mean, he has not, like, under law, been prosecuted for sex crimes.
Yeah, I can say...
He probably is a sex offender, too, but the fact he hasn't been convicted of it, I mean, you know. Yeah. Y'all can read you can read the appeals judgment and decide for yourself. I think
that's
some
true.
Crimes
that's
were committed.
True.
Yeah, it's also like, I can say, hey, Vic Mignogna is a creepy pedophile who preys on underage kids. I cannot say he sexually assaulted X person on X date at X time, and you know that being fabricated, that would be one thing, but saying that he's a fucking pedophile is totally allowed.
Correct. Right, absolutely right.
Sorry.
It is a matter of opinion, and you can't tell somebody they can't have an opinion.
Yep.
Right.
Freedom of speech, baby.
And so the court spends, you have the 70-page initial opinion. And then you have both the concurrence and a footnote in a separate concurrence and dissent saying, yeah, we agree with the majority about how bullshit this lawsuit was. It was a lot of bullshit. This guy's a pedo and a predator. The big part where there's actual disagreement was the question as to whether or not there should be even more attorney's fees that Vic should have to pay, whether or not the sanctions should be even higher.
Nice.
And what two of the three judges said is that, yes, this was so egregious, the trial judge did not give enough sanctions to the defendants, send the case back for even more. And so the main opinion is like, give them everything they asked for. The third judge, who dissented in part, said, no, just leave the fees the same. And the second judge says, go somewhere in the middle. You don't have to give them everything they asked for, but it's got to be more than what they got. So as crazy as it sounds, even 3 years later, this case is not over, because there is going to be, back at the trial court level, another hearing on attorney's fees and a decision as to whether or not more sanctions should be put in to punish Vic for his bumptious lawsuit. And
again, so is this part of why Ty then has now submitted more paperwork asking for another 45 days? To review things?
No, so that's different.
Different? Okay.
Yeah, when you have an appeal come out, usually there's a set timetable, typically 10, 15 days, to decide whether or not you're going to try to convince the Supreme Court of the state to hear it. And so what Ty has said is
he needs time to think about it.
Basically.
Okay.
Now, he doesn't say that. What he says is that there's so many causes of action and these opinions are so long, I need to digest it, which... to me, again, as a litigator, guy who did First Amendment cases for 10 years, is a sign that he's a fucking idiot, because I was able to digest the opinion in about an hour, and that's reading 100 pages. So take the 100 pages, analyze it, digest it, put it on Twitter. It doesn't take that fucking long. But, you know, when you don't know what you're doing, you want to beg for more time. So asking for 2 months, and honestly, the court's probably going to give it to him because they realize there's no chance in hell the Supreme Court of Texas is going to take this case. So they're probably going to say, no harm, no foul, take all the time you want.
Fine, go ahead, clown. Take all the time you need, yeah.
So I have a question then. Why, for the love of all that's, you know, good and holy or whatnot,
for the love of all humanity, which will come up later.
Yeah. Why, if you've lost your first case, you've lost your second, third, whatever, wouldn't the normal person fire your lawyer and get a new fucking lawyer? Why is he sticking with you? Why? I cannot be the only one
keep
to think that.
Keep in mind, Ian is kind of a virgin as far as the thread knot is concerned.
Yes.
In no other way can my husband ever be considered a virgin except for this.
No.
That he's
At the same time, that's a perfectly valid question. Why is I think that is a totally valid question.
He only knows about this because
a person of normal average intelligence. A person of normal average intelligence would kind of look at this and be like, I'm sure getting screwed over by a bunch of morons.
Right.
Maybe I need to look at some options. Yeah. Right.
I'm going to give you a couple reasons. Mm-hmm. I can't say for sure that they're the reasons, but they're good guesses, I think. So Screech, Nick Rikita, this fake lawyer in Minnesota who has a law license but doesn't use it. He spends his time I'm drinking on YouTube. Nick comes from a very, very exceptionally wealthy family. And so his grandparents were, by all accounts, good people. They were big time philanthropists down in Texas. And Ty Beard was their estate lawyer. So Nick is a trust fund baby. He has a trust fund. Ty Beard did the documents to get that trust fund set up. And so If you look at some of the early YouTube videos before the Threadnought, but still talking about this case, Screech brags at length about how tight he is with Ty and how he can call Ty whenever he wants and he can go ahead and talk to them about anything relating to this lawsuit. And so when Screech set up this GoFundMe, it was done under the guise of, hey, you're going to hire my friend, my family's estate lawyer, and he's going to run this case. So Vic is not going to fire Ty because Vic doesn't have any money on the line initially. The GoFundMe is paying for all of the attorney's fees. That's the first piece. The second piece is that while he's in litigation, but before he lost, Vic was convinced he was going to win because a lot of these people, Vic and his fans, have like highly motivated reasoning and they are adamant that something is going to happen that's going to enable them to win the case. Even though there's like 50 something lawyers, several of us who do defamation law and know the law backwards and forwards, telling them there is no chance in hell this is going to work, they are convinced otherwise.
Yeah, sunk cost.
So that's why he doesn't fire him before the hearing.
Well, it's also sunk cost fallacy, right? Of the idea of like they're so far into it, you know.
Sunk cost doesn't hit until after the trial loss. That's why he didn't fire him for the appeal. Because when you've got an appeal going on, you've got that very short time window to decide if you're going to appeal. And then there's a set of timelines that you have to meet to get that appeal done. You've got a certain amount of time to finish the record. You've got a certain amount of time to file the brief. And so at that point, Vic is in it. He's got Ty in it. He can't say, you're done, I got to go find an appellate lawyer, because he's not going to have time to do it. There's no appellate lawyer in Texas who's going to wade through that much bullshit to take a case that is destined to lose. It's not going to happen. And so Vic was stuck. So that's the second piece. You have on the first piece, the fact that Nick is raising the money. Second piece, you've got this inflated bit of self-importance followed by sunk cost in this particular narrow time span. The third piece is that I think people are intentionally trying to hide the information about the incompetence. So if you look at Vic's Twitter page, he's blocked nearly every single lawyer who has weighed in on the case. Huh. Now, do we think Vic is actually on Twitter, actually monitoring his mentions that closely to know who to block. I sincerely doubt it.
No, in fact, just a couple of weekends ago, he was at Anime Matsuri in Houston, one of the very few conventions that still continue to have him as a guest.
Fuck that
because
convention.
Anime Matsuri is full of their... They're full of their own predators running that particular event.
Yeah,
so, they got to stick together.
AM is garbage.
Exactly. So he says publicly in front of a whole room of people and while on camera and everything, oh, I don't even like being on Twitter. My fan club, they do everything out of the goodness of their heart. They're just volunteers, a.k.a. he doesn't pay anybody to do anything for
his
him.
Social media,
but they... They run his social media, and he specifically mentioned, like, Twitter, Instagram, and we know for certain that somebody else runs, like, his Twitch.
Dude,
somebody else does that for him.
If my Botox implants were falling apart as badly as him, I would not have an Instagram account.
I need to look this up.
Yeah.
Now, he's, like, 60, and his face is failing. Like, I'm not trying to body shame folks, but when you purposely try and, Botox the shit out of yourself and then you're like back alley fucking, injections start falling apart. I'm going to make fun of you for trying to, he's still trying to look 20.
When
so
you're
that he
looking,
can scam
when,
on
when,
them 13
when you're trying
year olds.
To look like Rob Lowe, but looking like Al Swearengen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's been trying to fight his aging for years, and there have been all kinds of people who have talked about how much he hates talking about his age or how he's getting older. It's a really big ego thing for him.
Yeah,
he
and you've also
got to
remember
how old
he's
aging. Sucks
he's basically
in many ways, but...
He's basically the creepy youth group pastor who managed to get an anime gig. Like, that's who he is.
You want to rap about Pokemon kids?
Yeah, no, he's going to turn the chair around backwards. He's going to put his hat on backwards and be like, so, do you know who else had to fight and win? That's right, Jesus Christ. Like, that's who he fucking is. And I'm not kidding. He's all evangelical and weird about that shit, too, while being a creep. Well, the question I have for Greg is, let's rewind back to the beginning. Vic decides, like, and I know, Screech convinced him to, but let's say Vic decides, I'm not going to take this anymore. I'm not going to stand for all these people accusing me things I've actually done. And he hires, and I know a bunch of lawyers turned him down, but let's say he had enough money that he could hire a competent lawyer to prosecute the defamation case for him. Was there ever any chance he could have won? Let's say that lawyer was smart enough to tell him, hey, when you're in a deposition, don't physically demonstrate you yanking on a woman's hair when that's what she's accused you of doing. Like,
I didn't do it like this. I did it like this.
Yeah, let's presume competence. Was there ever any chance that a lawyer could have won this fucking case?
It depends on how you define one. I'm serious. And so normally with defamation cases, you are never going to actually get to the end of the rainbow with a pot of gold. It either gets dismissed on an anti-slap motion if you're in states like Texas, it gets dismissed on a motion to dismiss if you're in a regular state, or it ends in what's called summary judgment, where a judge decides that it doesn't get to go to trial because there's nothing to go to trial about. That is how well over 95% of all defamation cases end. The goal of a defamation slap suit, something that is facially meritless and you're only filing it to shut someone up, is to extort money out of them. And so in this particular case, with one particular statement out of the several hundred that were involved, with one particular defendant, yes, that could have potentially happened. And so with Monica, one of the people that he had sued, there was a claim that he had attacked her inside of a hotel room, and only two of them were in the room at the time.
Oh, this is a slave.
And under
thing,
Texas
law.
Yeah. And so only two people, when they're the only two in the world that know a particular event, there is a Texas case called Vander Linden v. Kahn that Mike, one of the attorneys involved in the Threadknot, pointed out to Ty and Nick on the very first day of the Threadknot, back in June 6th of 2019, saying, oh, this is a key case. This would matter. And what that case says is that when you have a situation where only two people can competently speak to what happened, if one person says you did it, the other person says, no, I didn't, that's good enough to get past the anti-slap motion. The case would still end up losing at some point, probably on summary judgment, but at least in Texas, for that anti-slap motion, that early dismissal with the attorney's fees and the sanctions, you could get past that. And if you get past that, the defendant now is going to end up spending a ton of money in hourly lawyer time to go through discovery and to fight the case for months on end until you get to a summary judgment here.
See,
and so that's why most of the time...
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say is I had to look that up in the early days of the Threadknot because I saw like a dozen lawyers point this out to this moron like, hey, here's the one thing you can do to prevent your client from having to pay your fees is this specific case in this specific instance. And at the time, I didn't really get it because I didn't know anything about fucking slap law. Literally, all of this was brought to my attention because I was friends with somebody who had dealt with, like, Gamergate mobs, and now the Gamergate mob had transformed themselves into Animegate mob, and I was, like, interested in, like, the Twitter hellscape version of, oh, let's see what these dipshits are screaming about now. I don't know shit about law. But I honestly also feel like I could have probably prosecuted this case better than Ty did. Especially because judges tend to give judges tend to give pro se people a little more leeway. So I could have probably gotten away with a little more. But
hey,
yeah.
you know the term pro se. You're you know 100 points up.
Yeah. But yeah, so the Van der Linden thing, it's literally just like they could have squeezed by Vic having to sell his house and hide his assets if they had listened to you guys where you gave it to them. But they couldn't listen to you guys because that would have hurt their egos. Yeah. Was where I was going.
Absolutely right. Had they listened to us, and it didn't have to be me. It just happened that all of us were saying the same thing. They could have listened to Mike, who came in, you know, much nicer about it than I did.
Mike Dunford, right?
Could have listened to Akiva. Could have listened to all sorts of people. Dunford, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So Mike is much more diplomatic. Yeah, he's fantastic, but he's a lot more diplomatic. At least he was in the early days. He's gotten kind of, you know, a little bit more curmudgeonly in the past 3 years.
After three years of this shit, who hasn't?
He was... you know, when it first started, he was trying to be nice about it. And there was actual, like, lawyerly discussions about the law. Me, that wasn't my approach. I was like, you're a fucking moron. And then they would tag me and say, oh, yeah, well, the First Amendment is different in Texas. And I'd be like, fuck you. No, it's not. You know, so I was a bit more combative about it. But, yeah, they had the cases from the beginning. They finally cited the cases when they were doing the TCPA hearing, but they fucked it up because they didn't understand the case's significance. So it shows up in the brief, but they're using it wrong. It's not actually being used for how you would use that particular case for. And so it's just, this is what happens when you hire an attorney who's not qualified to do the job, because the only reason you know that attorney exists is he happens to be the estate lawyer for a random shouty man on YouTube who's raising you money.
And then I would like to get into random shouty man on YouTube who's raising money. Kalen, you said you wanted to talk about that. I made reference to the fact that Keffels, which to any of our not as terminally online listeners, thank you. God bless you. Stay away. Twitter is hell. Keffels is a Twitch streamer. She's trans. She has been being repeatedly doxxed by the Kiwi Farm motherfuckers. In addition to a bunch of people screaming that she's racist because she likes noodles. Basically, Nick has now pivoted because I think he thinks or realizes that the Vic shit has sort of run its course. So now he's pivoting to attacking this person. But Kaylin, you wanted to talk about Kiwi Farms, and also I really do want, after this case was decided, after the appeals came down, as Kaylin was saying before you got on, Greg, somebody, we don't know who yet, got onto one of those things where you can type something up on the web and fax it, and faxed a plea to the judiciary that had decided this case, which Kaylin does have looked up. So, yeah, take it away, Mars girl. Go for it. Like, let's get your part of this.
so let's do this filing first. So that came through on the same date as, I'm pretty sure it was the same date or the day after that the appeals decision was made. So some random ass fan just decided, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna write a letter and then I'm gonna fax it to the court. And it says here, I'm gonna try and read this as quickly as possible because it's just ludicrous. I'm gonna keep this as short as I can, but I must inform you that you have truly done an injustice this week, helping the liars that tried to ruin a man's life in the case of Vic Mignogna. Monica Rial, Ron Toye, and Jamie Markey are all terrible people and proven liars. It's clear as day to any reasonable person, especially watching the depositions, how vile these people are. They have been caught in lie after lie, constantly changing their stories while being the most vindictive and rude people on the planet, proud of their foul actions. Judge John P. Chup acted improperly and refused to look at perfectly good evidence presented by Ty Beard in the hearing in which he dismissed Vic Mignogna's case. You, likewise, have done an improper disservice to all of those trying to fight against false allegations made against them. It is absolutely defamatory to try and destroy someone's life with lies, and there was plenty of context in those tweets, beyond plenty. It's absolutely heartbreaking, the precedent you have now set, making it harder for those defamed to want to try and fight back against their false accusers. I, and many actually good people on this earth, we beg you to consider the reconsideration if it comes in from Vic's legal team. Please, for the good of all mankind, for the truth, for true justice, do the right thing.
How many of those words were in all caps?
Not, it wasn't even that, like, all caps.
You know, none.
This dude in his head was One Punch Man standing on the edge of a building giving a speech. Like, I swear to God, he might as well have had, like, the Vampire Hunter D cape and hat, the swished it around wind. Him, and then...
The heroic, you know, trickle of blood.
Yes, like, a joke from my D&D playing days. One of my players wanted to introduce himself to the party, and he insisted, and everyone laughed at him for it. He was like, well, you know, when I show up, you see that I've got a heroic trickle of blood coming from the corner of my mouth. And I was like, what is a heroic trickle of blood? It does the trickle of blood just, you know, does it have a fanfare muscly all its own? That is what this is. This dude thinks he is a character in
standing against the world.
Yeah, no, like, he, speaking of Kamen Rider, like, he really does think he is standing on a mountaintop. The wind is blowing his coat out from behind him as he grips...
It is a cloak, excuse me.
As he's, like, gripping the ivory handle
of
his
justice.
Katana.
Yeah.
Like, it's... That is a legal... What Kaylin just read to you guys is... It's been published. It's a legal filing. Right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, it's on the docket.
It's on the...
If you go to the docket for this particular case, it's there.
That is something that has been legally filed in the United States of America in regards to a lawsuit for the good...
Mind you, these are the same people that decided, oh, Judge Chup did not rule in the way we wanted him to rule, so we're going to go to his dead Facebook page that is getting no traction and just write a bunch of death threats on it and then, like, mail his home or whatever and just send him a bunch of death threats because that will really
encourage
him. I'm
going to poop in a box and then send it to this guy's address.
And that will make him rule on the case in the way I like. It's deranged.
You know, let me see. We may have the, let me see if I've got the Death Threat archive somewhere. So the different, and I say that only half jokingly. So Vic Mignogna's fans, Death Threats got sent to like a dozen different people.
Mm-hmm.
I think you got one of them.
Did. You know what? I'm going to have to come back to this because I got something different at the beginning of this year.
She
but
got
please,
the poop in a box.
Go ahead and put these. It was close to poop in a box, but it was not actually poop in a box.
Yeah, I don't know where it is. I have to go digging for it. I've got a Google Drive of the different death threats.
Despite being about as tertiary to this case as can be, like literally the only thing we did that I did, because really this podcast is my responsibility, was be like, okay, this is hilarious. We should talk about it on my stupid show where we make jokes about how big my husband's gaping asshole is. Like, literally, that's 90% of our show's content is just me.
How many raccoons I can fit in my ass.
Me making perverted jokes about my husband and us talking about pop culture shit. And I was like, oh, hey, look, anime. That's pop culture. Let's talk about that in this weird case that popped up.
I don't even like anime.
That's what got us doxxed and people, like, on the farms.
And
writing fantasies about raping my daughter.
Yeah.
Like, literally, that's all we did was allow a few people involved in this. Not even allow, but just
Justin was mad about it because he actually watches anime. He has a ton of anime.
Honey, this thing is so old. Kapla wasn't even a co-host the first time we had people on the show about it.
That is sad.
Mallory,
so this is kind of where I want to get into the Kiwi Farm shit, because
by all means,
so like early on, even before it blew up to lawsuit level, Kiwi Farms actually was not on Vic's side initially, because for years even 4chan was not on his side. So there are different boards on 4chan.
Yes.
There's one that's CGL, which is specifically dedicated to cosplay and elegant Lolita attire, fashion. And so because you're talking about cosplay, you're talking about conventions. And actually, that was one specific board on 4chan that was very highly attended by women, which you don't really get on other parts of
4chan.
But a lot of... Yeah, a lot of women went to the CGL board. And so for just years, we're talking over a decade, 15 years, people, there's still archives of these threads where people are telling these stories about the behavior of Vic Mignogna. And mind you, because it is 4chan, you do have to take some of it with a grain of salt. But then you have conversations with other people in like the real world. And then they tell you real stories and you're like... So 4chan wasn't making all of it up? So you have to like read between the lines to figure out what's real and what's not real. This carries over to Kiwi Farms, right? So Kiwi Farms has existed for years as just a place to harass anybody. Started specifically to harass Chris Chan, who's an autistic person who has later identified as trans,
had her life completely ruined by these people, like where they imagine the Truman Show, but that everyone watching the Truman Show can call in and directly interact with Truman, and also all of the people that call in and do that are psychopaths.
It's kind of that.
Yeah. So Netflix, like Chris Chan is not
on the internet.
Yeah, it's worse.
Yeah.
Chris Chan might not necessarily be a great person, but there is plenty of reason to believe that they might have gone off the deep end in a lot of ways because of ways they were pushed by Kiwi Farms.
Chris Chan is not
so it
a good
starts
person.
Off dedicated.
Right.
Yeah, Chris Chan is not a good person because these people tortured her for 15, 20 years. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Right. Oh, no, that's fine. So it later just sort of shifts and changes to, instead of being dedicated to this one person, then they start picking out all kinds of other people that they think are lolcows, you know, just dedicated to mocking literally anyone for any reason, although they do have a weird fixation about trans people and autistic people and stuff like that. But if you are in any way leaning against the far right in any, like, even like a little bit, then like they'll pick on you for any reason. But mind you, this forum was like, oh no, we believe that Vic Mignogna motherfucker did that shit. Oh yeah, my sister like got a weird phone call from Vic this one time and it was really creepy, blah blah blah. So initially they are not on his side at the beginning of 2019 when all of this is blowing up. However, when SJW hating YouTube shouty men picked this stuff up and they turned it into a culture war.
Yep.
Then Kiwi Farms decided, well, we will fight for this culture war. Vic is the poster child of this Christian white cishet male that we need to protect with all of the fervor of an entire army. And they willingly became his army, even though they'll totally deny they are an army for him. It is what they became.
Yeah, they're so, a bunch of fucking suckers, really. They're a bunch of saps.
Right, right.
They're sad little kids. And I say little kids, even though some of them are like in their 40s. They're these sad people whose only joy that they derive out of life is winning the game, and the game is doxing and harassing people to whatever level they can push it. Like I saw,
right,
even though I don't go on the site even to look at my own, like the shit they've put up about me. I've had other people pass me screenshots. I saw how celebratory they were after near killed themselves. Like they pushed a trans person to suicide and then spent the rest of that day jumping up and down, clapping in glee about it. And to this day now, push the narrative that, oh, Near faked their own death and, like, you know, are is doing it just to attack us because we're the poor little victims.
Yeah, so Kiwi Farms will do, just like you said, they'll go to any extreme. So they'll post any amount of information. It's not even always correct information. I think Greg can also attest to that.
What car did you have, Greg?
They discovered in 2019 that I drove a Hyundai that got totaled in a car accident in 2016. So in 2019, they're telling everyone I'm a Hyundai driving lawyer. I must be dirt poor, even though I got a Toyota like 3 years prior.
Also, why is a
so
Hyundai
yeah, it'll be
poor?
Like a mix. Yeah, it'll be like a mix of true information and false information. So they'll dox you, your family, your dead family. They put like my marriage certificate online. They posted a bunch of wrong addresses or old addresses and stuff like that. My husband's family, that kind of stuff, places of work, that sort of thing. So when Greg was mentioning like a whole bunch of people received actual physical mail death threats, I did not receive those. Now, I have not publicly talked about this thing that I did receive earlier this year, but actually it was mailed to the wrong address, and then it came to me. So the intention was that somebody was going to use bad information that they found on Kiwi Farms to mail something to me, and it was supposed to be there by Christmas. And that did not happen because I did not live at the place that they thought that I lived. So somebody very kindly thought they were doing the right thing and got it my way 6 weeks later. And I found that this person had like paid for express shipping. So they spent a bunch of money for this package to show up at my door, and it didn't even show up on time. And I open it up. It is a chocolate penis, and it comes with a postcard that says something to the effect of, oh, well, since you can't get Vic's name out of your mouth, here's a dick you can eat or something like that. And I put this postcard on my fridge, and my husband hates it.
He really hates that I put it in the perfect time of this conversation.
Long story short, Kiwi Farms attempted to send her harassing chocolate.
I gathered.
Oh, no, you sent me chocolate. Like, I know the implication is we know where you fucking live, ha, ha, ha. But considering
they don't, because it went to the wrong place.
See, they absolutely do with me. They've posted pictures of my house. So,
But it's the fact that they tried. You know, there's an attempt made, and they are willing to go to that length to do that. So the way this ties now into Keffels, who, as you mentioned, is just a trans person trying to live her life in Canada and do live streams and shit. Suddenly she finds herself in the middle of being doxxed and harassed by Kiwi Farms. And she's like a pretty big name person on both Twitch and Twitter. And she ended up getting swatted, which is not good. And she's since been motivated after leaving her home and moving multiple times in just the last couple of weeks. She's since been extremely motivated to run this Drop Kiwi Farms campaign, which seems to be doing gangbuster numbers. Now Nick Riceta is involved in this because Nick Riceta decided, I'm going to do a live stream about Keffels. Also, I'm going to keep having Josh Moon, who owns and operates Kiwi Farms, come on my show. So all of these weird things have sort of melded together in this weird amalgamation of, oh my God, it's all tied to Threadknot bullshit. It's really weird how it's all blowing up right at the same time.
But yeah, so yes, Keffels got doxxed. She left her home and she posted a picture saying she was safe. And the picture was of her cat lying on a bed. And the farmers cross-referenced the bed sheets until they found her hotel somehow. Then she fled across the Atlantic to Ireland and once again posted that she was safe. And they found a reflection on a doorknob and somehow used that. Now, what I was saying about the gamification of harassment, that's what they do, is like whoever found her, what hotel she was staying in by digging up the bed sheets.
These people need to get into like the true crime shit and like figure out like who
these people all need Minecrafted and Robloxed is what they need. But
I don't know what that means.
So it's super weird that, you know, Vic Mignogna's own lawyers, at the beginning of all of this, very openly wanted to use Kiwi Farms in order to further the harassment of Nick's victims and anybody who stood alongside his victims. So, like, Ty Beard, like, just sits here and says, and it's specifically of Greg, it would be a personal favor to me if you could, like, make these people's lives miserable, you know? Just awful, stupid shit.
Miserably.
Oh, absolutely. And see, the funny part, this is the part that always cracked me up, is that I had just run for political office 3 years prior. I was the Republican at the time nominee for the state Senate, the district I lived in. And as going through that process, you do the equivalent of getting doxxed by professionals. It's called opposition research. Mm-hmm. You make sure that people do that so there's no surprises on the campaign trail. And so all of the shit that they found, I mean, Kiwi Farms has had a thread going about me for like 3 years now. They've not found anything that I hadn't already known and disclosed back in 2016. And frankly, there's still a bunch of other shit that they didn't find because they weren't looking that hard.
He was a bankrupt lawyer who has a secret kid, I think was the other thing that was bullshit.
Oh, yeah. So what happened was that, so I have a son. My son was born in 1998, so he turned 24 this year. His mother and I are not together. And so someone saw a picture of me with him when he was a baby. And rather than process in their brains that I looked younger and had hair in this picture and realized that picture was from many years ago, they just assumed that I had a young kid and that I had, you know, not been paying child support or whatever. And then they found a separate picture of when I was dating a black woman and assumed that my kid was black. So I had a biracial child that I've abandoned. And that narrative began. At some point somewhere, someone started the idea that I also had a daughter with a Hispanic lady. So I had a Latina daughter somewhere. And no one bothers noting that I have one child, he's white, and he's 24 years old. So it's just they're painfully, painfully stupid.
This is very much like they want to be George W. Bush doxing John McCain for his, you know, black baby out of wedlock, and really he just adopted a kid type shit. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I get that the terrorism from Kiwi Farms is troubling for people from marginalized communities. I totally understand that. None of the shit they tried with me bothered me in the fucking slightest. I thought it was hilarious. The fact they were so comically inept at it was just funny as fuck.
Well, that's so, part of what's actually concerning is that for those marginalized people, they can be this comically inept about all of the information that they bring up, but they're so vitriolic about it that they'll just destroy people based on literal non-fact. Just bullshit.
Our community, the only thing we were really worried about was we get a lot of the, like, Trump said it's so, therefore it's so, and I'm gonna go, I know where those, you know, trannies live now, and they're, you know, molesting kids and whatnot, and I got their address, and I'm gonna show up, you know, that sort of shit.
I think the main reason that, like, because we pretty much fell off the radar, although after this podcast, I don't know that that'll stay so, is one of the pictures they dug up was from my old, now defunct Twitter account that got nuked because of Nazis. Where I had posted a picture that I made in my basement, and the picture is, I had made a nice little border using 30-06 shells, and then using a mix of shotgun shells, 9mm, 22, and 357, I had written "Kill all Nazis" and then put my two handguns and a cross underneath it, and then I posted that picture to Twitter with the caption, "Just made some fan art for Wolfenstein 2. What do y'all think?" And so they found that picture and they were like, oh, at least they know how to do plausible deniability. And I think the fact that I have a fuck ton of guns has kind of made them go, oh, maybe we shouldn't really threaten this tranny, because this tranny is going to shoot us if we show up. Because I will.
Well, that's part of the... Yeah, that's the part that cracked me up. So at some point, they found my address, and I'm like, it's public record. It's in the Register of Deeds. You go in and you search for a name. You find my address. But, like, guys, I was a Republican for 20 years. I love guns. Guns are great.
Yeah, just, like, you know, Indiana is a stand-your-ground state. Like, come on. Like, it's a stand-your-ground state. All I got to do is look at you and go, you know, it's... I feel in danger of my life. It's literally the South Park. It's like, coming right for us.
It's coming right for us.
Oh, look, it's a rare Kiwi farmer. It's coming right for us. Pop, pop, pop. Like, that's what it is, you
look,
know?
In North Carolina, you don't even have to say that. You just pull the trigger and talk about it after that.
Yeah, well, in Indiana.
So I'm going to say, like, one last thing, and then I've actually got to get out on this note.
Nope.
So aside from just the lawyers, I think Vic likes having plausible deniability that he's like, oh, well, I said people don't be mean, and I don't always condone all of this stuff, but you don't separate from your lawyer and you don't disavow your lawyer. But on top of that, there are a couple of other people that also participate in Kiwi Farms that are very closely related to him. So one of them is the leader of his fan club, who goes by the name of Squally.
Yep.
Online. Her real name's Alyssa, so she frequently uses Kiwi Farms to kind of bolster this narrative about Vic.
Ooh, there are two other... hates other women. Mm-mm.
Yeah, and then there are two other members that one was Stan Dolan, who was the party that Monica Rial said, oh, this is the guy that was at the door and interrupted Vic assaulting me. And he just said he didn't remember it happening. And from that point forward, he sort of just rode out this fame of being named in this lawsuit. And he started using Kiwi Farms as well to just keep staying on Vic's side. Then there was another trans woman who worked for Kitchener Comic Con, also in Canada, who's also been a very belligerent user of Kiwi Farms, also to defend Vic's honor. And then there's actually a woman, Lisa Hansel, who actually, as far as we are aware, she has 180'd on this opinion at some point in the last year, year and a half, but she was known as the Vic Whisperer. And she attempted to show up during Vic's deposition as what? Greg, do you remember this person? She was going to sit in on the deposition,
yeah,
and then they, like, kicked her out.
She was the Vic Whisperer, yeah.
Yeah,
like,
so they kicked her out. Like, what's she doing
here? Serial killer in prison.
basically.
So she
constantly calming him and telling him how amazing he is and you're doing fine,
exactly,
and everything else.
Gross. She was like his makeup artist. She was like his makeup artist on his fan films Star Trek Continues that you can now see on YouTube for free. So she defended him virulently for a very, very long time, and she would go on Kiwi Farms and say, no, I know him personally, I know him very well, and I know that he's this great guy. And then at one point, like a year and a half ago or so, maybe more, she stopped showing up to Kiwi Farms, and then her Twitter account started being vague tweets about how she knows that there's some narcissist who is a sexual predator who's been doing weird shit with teenagers. So she did some damage on her side, but at some point,
so basically,
all I'm saying though,
she saw it.
Yeah, she was all.
All
about...
I'm saying though is that Vic has a lot of people that are on his side that regularly use Kiwi Farms to defend him, and Vic does not denounce these people at all.
What I find funny about
his lawyer was on Twitter expressly asking for their assistance.
What I find funny,
like,
though,
I'll send y'all the link to the video.
Yeah, what you're describing. So, and I'm going to use some Gamergate language here. What you're describing to me is that there's all these people around Vic. You might say that they're orbiting or that they're orbiters around Vic, and that Vic is their alpha, and that they are his betas. Like, there are Vic has beta orbiters, which, according to Gamergate lore, means that Vic is a woman. And sorry, no, I'm joking. Like, literally, that's what it is. Is like, he's got this little proximity to some sort of fame. Like, initially, sure, it was for being Screamy Broccoli Man. Thank you, Kaylin. That it will live in my head rent-free forever, and I love you for it.
You're welcome.
Whenever I
but
come
also
back
the
out...
R. Kelly of anime is pretty
yes,
good.
Yes, yes.
So.
But whenever I get back R. out to Kelly L.A., we will meet up, and I will just be... I will just look at you and go, Screamy Broccoli Man. Anyway.
100%. 100%.
But, yeah, so Screamy Broccoli Man, he had that little bit of fame for, you know, oh, in anime circles, a little bit famous. He got bigger fame, and I'm sure this is probably psychologically part of the reason why he hasn't let this stupid fucking lawsuit that's cost him all sorts of money go, is he got onto the right-wing grifter train of fame. And there's all these there's all these other little accounts. You got your Ty Beard, your Nick Rikita, your Squally, your this makeup artist you're talking about, who they're all just desperate for a sip, just a taste of that fame. Like they're literally, Vic is standing up there as what's his face from Fury Road. What's the character?
I can't identify.
Vic is standing up there as Joe, and he pulls the plug, and the water that's coming down is the little sips of internet fame, and then he turns it back on. Do not be addicted to right-wing attention, my children. Like, that's literally what this fucking is. And the sad part is I think that Vic probably legitimately thinks these people are his friends. As opposed to people who are
Using I think
him to
Vic
get attention.
Is genuinely, I think Vic is genuinely kind of naive about a lot of things. Genuinely believes people are his friends. He thinks everybody is his friend, which is how he kind of got himself wrapped up into some NFT bullshit as well this past year. That was kind of funny. But then the guy running the NFT grift got his ass arrested for fraud, which was not the first time that man had been arrested for fraud.
Wait, his name
is really,
grift?
Really funny.
No, running the grift.
Oh, running the grift. Okay.
No, I wish his name was
grift.
His
name is grift?
So I wish I could talk more about this topic, but I actually do really need to scram. And
nope,
I'm
nope.
so sorry
bile,
that I have
bile,
to do this
bile
so
means
very
thank
quickly.
You for coming on, Kaylin.
Thank you so much for talking to me, and I will catch up and listen to the rest of this once you have this posted. This is always a good time.
Do you have anything?
Good to see you again, Greg, as well.
Did you want to plug anything real quick?
plug anything? Right now, my Twitter is getting a whole lot of traction due to this very topic. So, at MarsGirl, Keffels actually, just before we started this, retweeted me and followed me. So, there is, nice. My mentions are flooded right now. But
be prepared to be called racist over that, by the way.
Oh, totally. Completely. Yeah, so. That's about it, really, for the time being. Is just I'm on social media, and you will find out when I am doing other things, when I tweet about the other things.
Thank you, Kaylin. We love you. Bye.
Thank you so much, guys. I'll see you guys later.
All right. Bye. All right. So, yeah, Kaylin had to go. So, yeah, to wrap things up, we've been rolling for a little bit here. So, Vic lost 0-34, -1-35, whatever you want to call it. You know, he basically did the Mark Sanchez butt fumble on the entire legal case, which, Greg, if you're a football fan at all, you get that joke, and Ian does not.
Yep.
So where do they go from here? Because, like you said, Ty has 45 days now, or it's going to be granted probably 45 days. Like, are they – where can they possibly go at this point?
So the different players, where they go is going to vary. So Screech, Nick Rakita, his goal was always to use this case as a springboard to get into the right-wing grifting circuit.
Right.
So he did. He went from this case to being a commentator on the Kyle Rittenhouse shit, to being a commentator on the Johnny Depp shit, to now commenting on the Keffel shit. And so he rakes in probably $1 million a month, give or take, in super chat revenue.
Jesus Christ.
So he makes a shitload of money.
Fucking feet.
Well, honey, if I didn't have a soul, I could be rich. Yes. I could be the good trans person.
Yeah, if you don't mind,
person.
You know, being incompetent and representing to people shit that's not true to make money, y'all could probably make a shitload of money.
I am. So he's got. What I can wants. Be a good country redneck.
Yeah. Anyway, carry on.
So that is where he's going to end up. Vic is going to end up owing people probably $500,000, maybe more by the time it's done. Ty has helped him hide his assets in a trust. It'll remain to be seen whether or not the defendants can get to that. So, you know, Vic's basically not going to be able to make much money over and beyond whatever the limits are under Texas law, because anything beyond that, the defendants can have the government seize and sell to pay their particular judgments. In Ty's case, there's no telling. Ty is going to probably fuck up another appeal. He's probably going to fuck up the sanctions hearing that's going to come back, but he's not going to give a shit because he made $250,000 doing, you know, utterly buffoonery work on behalf of Vic, paid for by Vic's fans. So Ty's going to be happy either way.
And that's the depressing thing about this, honestly, is and I don't feel bad for Vic because he's scum, but he was completely used by these two other grifters to make money, and he's going to wind up just owing money. But the depressing thing about that is literally that even though
he's like a disgraced lawyer, he'll still have, you know, clients and shit.
I'm saying Vic.
No, I was talking about...
No, Ty made $250,000 off of credulous asshole anime fans who, when donating their money, they weren't actually thinking, oh, if I donate this money, an innocent man might be exonerated. They thought in their heads, oh, some SJW is going to see that I donated my entire paycheck, and they're going to cry and scream and be triggered. And that's the only joy that those scumbags get out of life. But the point is, Fireball Nick is making...
I knew there was a reference to the Fireball comment that Greg
is making
earlier.
Fucking bank, basically just being...
He waited for 3 years to make quarter
No, no,
million
he's
dollars.
Been making money off of this.
Well, yeah, but...
It's just, he's making money being a screaming drunk idiot on YouTube.
How did this guy pass the bar? Is the bar really that easy?
Is the bar that low,
If my
Greg?
Memory serves me... Well, it depends. Different states have different pass rates. But my recollection is that his law school no longer exists. So, you know, honestly, I don't know. But here's the thing. There are a lot of lawyers. Nick's not stupid. At least not in a cognitive sense. He could be, a moderately not terrible lawyer if he stuck to like shit that's not hard to fuck up. You know, and I say this, I have done criminal defense work. There are great criminal defense attorneys out there. There are bad criminal defense attorneys out there. The worst criminal defense attorneys I know are as competent, if not more so, than Rikita. So Rikita could do that and would be okay.
Right.
But he doesn't want that. He wants fame.
Yeah, he wants attention. Hi, Felix. Sorry.
Correct. It's a half attention.
No, you are not the knights that say me.
Good night, Felix. Go to bed.
It is almost midnight. Go to bed.
Go to bed. We'll be down in a little bit.
Yep.
I'll tuck you in a little bit. Good night.
Good night.
Close the door. Sorry, 11-year-old. Yeah.
No, hey, I get it, man. Been there. But yeah, so Rikita wants the attention. He wants the money that comes with the attention. But to do that, you got to be a legal commentator that understands more complex cases than just your basic run-of-the-mill petty larceny DWI type stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so he wants to talk about defamation shit, but he's not smart enough to figure that part out. So he just bullshits his way through it. He says, this is what I think. This is what the law says. It's totally fucking wrong.
Jumps on culture war bullshit.
Yeah, but because he's got a law license, people are inclined to believe it. And when other people say, oh, wait a minute, that's full of shit, most of us don't have YouTube channels because lawyers, we focus on the written word because that's how we work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're watching some YouTube, there's a chance you might be persuaded by their charismatic voice or their hand gestures or their fancy graphics. And that's not how law works. Law is based on words on text. It's statutes. It's, you know, complaints, pleadings, that sort of thing. So the lawyers on Twitter, a lot of them are fucking terrible. Now, there are some who are very good. If you watch, for example, Legal Eagle is great. He puts in actual effort to make sure he's got the law right. And he's got the charisma and the graphics and all that other shit, too. But he actually tries to make sure he does a good job. So he's fun to watch. But a lot of people, especially the YouTube lawyers that weighed in on this case, they don't practice this kind of law. They just see something that everyone's talking about and they want the super chat money that everyone else is getting. So they just come in and opine about shit that they get totally wrong. And if you're just a random person going on YouTube, you don't know that. You don't know who's an incompetent mm-hmm. lawyer and who's a good one. You have no way of being able to tell. All you know is that YouTube recommended this particular lawyer to you, or you saw a thread about them on Kiwi Farms.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is law is complex enough that somebody like me, you know, I work in a soda bottling plant. I'm not going to know if when Screech cites like three random cases, I don't have time to go look at those cases and go, well, actually, you're misrepresenting what happened in this case. First off, the language is going to be kind of impenetrable to me because I've never been to law school. And secondly, who has time for that? So we have to rely on other lawyers, and there's so few lawyers in... And I know, you were registered as a Republican for years, but I'm going to point this out. There's so few lawyers who aren't, like, right-wing fascists who have YouTube shows that can explain this stuff properly, that all the information you're going to get are from, you know, dipsticks like Rikita. Which, honestly, though... What? Anybody who takes him seriously after seeing the video of him drunk off his ass whining that Vic won't come play golf with him anymore deserves what they fucking get.
Oh, that one was glorious. And part of the reason you don't see these people on also is that they don't have the fucking patience to deal with the commenters because all these dumbass commenters will come on about it. And so I'll give you an example. I did a YouTube video back in 2020. I've only done like a couple videos in my entire life. I am not a YouTube guy. Right. I have a face for.
I've seen the video in question, I'm sure, because I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so it was about the Electoral Count Act, mm-hmm. something totally unrelated to this lawsuit. And it went viral. Well, rather than comment on stuff relating to the Electoral Count Act, a bunch of fucking people from Vic Mignogna's orbit or the Kiwi Farms orbit or wherever are commenting on an Electoral Count Act video about Vic Mignogna's case. So it's just, most people don't have the patience to deal with that shit. Me, I responded to them. I'm like, wow, you're really fucking stupid. But if y'all get bored and you want to go through it, you can see some of these comments.
Yeah, that's one thing I've always appreciated. That's to quote Letterkenny, that's what I appreciate about you.
That's what I appreciate about
you.
You do not
suffer fools. You quote tweet them, you tear them apart, and then generally speaking, they either double down or they like delete the fucking tweet.
I'll be right back.
Right. Oh, dude, it's awful because the beginning parts of the thread knot, so many tweets have either been deleted or the accounts have been suspended. I can't figure out what the hell I was responding to half the time.
Yeah, I know. And I've gone back and looked at some of it and it's like, man, I wish I just screenshotted everything. But then I also am like, how big of a Google storage account would I have needed to screenshot the entire fucking thread knot? Because that thing
right.
was so,
Amen.
It was, it had its tentacles so far out, and it broke Twitter so quickly. But, so, to kind of wrap things up, which, also, side note, when is Fiskamall coming back?
I hope so. Short answer is I don't know.
I still have it on my podcast list, by the way.
Originally, we went on hiatus because I was, like, drowning in work for my law firm.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just, especially since COVID, it's been really a challenge to keep up. Well, I've since gotten a job. So I now work for, I'm not going to disclose who. It's not particularly well concealed, but, you know,
right,
I'm sure
right,
Kiwi
right,
Farms
right,
is listening
right.
to this. I want them to put effort before they figure out where I'm at. And so I've been working there, planning to resume the podcast once I got settled, which I am now. But the laptop that I use to record it is dying. So like the battery is actually bulging a bit. The case is starting to bulge a bit.
Okay.
It is not continued use. So when I get a new laptop, you know, I'm talking to y'all on my work one right now. I don't want to record police podcasts on that given the nature of what I talk about.
Fair.
I don't want to get fired.
Yeah, fair.
But when I have a new laptop on which I can record stuff without it exploding, yes, I would like to bring it back.
All right. So, well, Greg, thank you so much for spending some time with us. I know you've got, you know, family to deal with. You've got the cat. I cannot remember the cat's name.
Biscuit. Biscuit. Yes.
That's our dog's name.
That's right. Our dog's name is Biscuit.
Is it really?
Yes. Yes. She is
Biscochito, because it's the New Mexico State cookie. It's a Christmas cookie we adopted around Christmas, and she's kind of
she's that color.
Color.
Yeah, but
yeah.
She's a half Jack Russell, we think, and
half
Dachshund.
And maybe a little bit of Beagle thrown in. That's what
But anyway.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
that Beagle blood is dangerous. I had a Beagle.
She's cute, but
she's so cute, but
way
so destructive.
Too smart and too much of a chewer and digger.
But anyway, did you have anything aside from the podcast that I'm begging you to bring back that you wanted to plug?
If anyone wants to follow me on Twitter, and I caution you against it just as a heads up, but look for me. It's Greg_Doucette. So Greg_Doucette. I am not the Canadian bodybuilder, Greg Doucette. So if you want, you know, that type of thing, look for him. Coach Greg is on YouTube. I am on Twitter. We have separate spheres of influence.
And
Greg but yeah,
is,
I'm on Twitter all the time.
Yeah, Greg is prolific on Twitter. And if you want to see fools get told, the quote tweet is Greg's greatest weapon. That's what you do, is people
Correct.
Respond to you. And then you quote tweet them and make them look like idiots. And then they double down until into oblivion.
Hey, real quick before you go, what was that fundraiser that you helped do?
Oh, Greg, the fundraiser, he's been doing that for
like
years.
The food fundraiser.
Yeah,
so
by all means, plug
something.
The fundraiser.
It is called the Bull City Food Raiser. We do it twice a year. The fundraising for that is not going to happen until November, but you got to follow me on Twitter to hear about it. But the first Friday in November and the first Friday in February, we raise money and we use that to buy a shitload of groceries, roughly 52 pallets of groceries from Costco. We have it shipped to an elementary school gym, and we spend 3 days parceling those pallets out into around 5,100 bags of groceries that we then give one per student at each of 12 elementary schools in Durham.
Yeah.
So we've been doing that for about 8 years now.
Yeah. Didn't you guys have the most groceries ever that Costco had ever delivered or something?
Yeah. So our December one from last year went viral because we crossed over $100,000. It was the largest purchase ever at the Durham Costco. And then in March, we spent $130,000. So we've now got both of the top two records for that particular store.
Yeah, and the thing about that is I do remember you talking about on your Twitter about the logistics, trying to find trucks and stuff like that. And what cracked me up about that is at the time you were doing that, we actually interviewed Shiv Ramdas, or Shiv, who's an author, an Indian author. You might know him. He went viral for the rice truck tweet. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So we had him on there, and I saw you talking about truck logistics, and I was like, oh, God, they need to talk to Shiv. Because,
it was the whole thing about the lorry full of rice. Yeah, and so like trying to schedule trucks yourself if you're not in that environment was a challenge. And so Amazon knew that. And so Amazon bought a dispatch service trying to make it easy to get tractor trailers.
Yeah.
And so I signed up because it was actually very easy to use. And so one of them got there on time, got the food delivered on time, no problem. One of them had a flat tire. And rather than notify me of a flat tire or arrange for a replacement or something, they just canceled the load entirely and said, we'll send you another truck tomorrow. And I'm like, well, all of this shit is on a very tight timetable. You can't send me a truck tomorrow. We've got a forklift. I've only got that forklift for a day. We've got volunteers. I've only got the volunteers for 3 days. And we can't pack any bags unless we've got all of the ingredients for the bags. Right. And so Amazon f***ed this over. And I've been very...
As someone who has dealt with inventory in my current job, which by the way, folks, if you're worried about your Schmepsi or your Schmoka Schmola, I'm not going to reveal which major bottler I work with. Most of the problem is getting cans in. It's almost like, and we will have trucks just be like, oh, we've reached our 10-hour limit. We are 3 miles away, but our driver is going to pull off into a rest area for 12 hours because they are, you know, within their 10-hour limit. So you guys are going to have to stop and wait for these cans. Like, literally, like, I have dealt with that sort of shit many, many, many a time. So the next time you guys do the fundraiser, if you run into logistics problems dealing with shipping companies, hit me up because I know how to browbeat those motherfuckers into doing what they're supposed to do. So, but yes.
I will do it. Hey, having those contacts helps.
Follow Greg on Twitter. When the fundraiser comes up in November, by all means, please, please, please donate. It helps Durham immeasurably. Like, you guys, I see your threads. And I see people responding, and like the amount that you guys help is amazing. So, folks, thank you so much for bearing with us in coming to the conclusion. I guess the conclusion, because Ty's gonna do another thing. So maybe here in 6 months, we're gonna be back again. I would also love Greg to have.
I was saying, it might be another episode. I think.
Yeah, I would love sometime Greg to have you on and not talk about the Threadknot and just like sit around and bullshit. So,
we can talk about if you like circus peanuts or not.
Yeah. So, but.
Oh, they're terrible. Absolutely terrible. They're terrible. Anyone who likes those, I question their business.
We had a bad candy like round table.
We did have a round table about the worst candies, and circus peanuts was unanimously voted number one.
Yeah.
So. Thank you, everybody. You can find us on Twitter at Violet Wanderers. You can find us on the web, violetwanderers.com. Email the show, thevioletwanderers@gmail.com. So, and you can join our Patreon, patreon.com/thevioletwanderers. So, Greg, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for taking the time out. And say hi to Biscuit for me.
and your beautiful wife.
Yes.
I'll do it. I appreciate y'all both. This is always a fun time. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Night.